OWC Radio 2.0, episode number 7. I've got Allison Sheridan from the Mozilla Cast. Check it out. And with that music, of course, that means it's time for OWC Radio 2.0. This is episode 7, lucky number 7. In fact, it's really lucky for me because I've got a really cool guest, and we're going to kick off the show with her. She is the host of the Mozilla Cast. Her name is Allison Sheridan. Hello, Allison.
Hey, Tim. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm excited to be on this show. I mean, I love the stuff you do. I love OWC. It's all win.
That's kind of the reason that I wanted to do the show. I really like that company. I bought a lot of stuff through them over the years. And I did the original OWC podcast back in 2009 in through 2010. I had to leave the show, and some other people took it over, but I got the opportunity to come back. We relaunched it as the 2.0 version, and I really wanted to talk with people, especially this year, about the Mac, because you remember a few months ago, everybody was celebrating the Mac's 30th anniversary.
And yeah, I actually went to that party.
You went to the one in Cupertino.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a couple of friends that went to that. They said it was amazing.
It was really, really fun. Getting to see the people. I got to meet a lot more people that I hadn't met before that I should have known, and like Dr. Bob Levitis, and that was really fun.
I've met him quite a few times. Usually I only meet him at Macworld Expos, but I've had him on this show already a couple episodes ago, and he's always fun to talk to. But what I wanted to do was kind of keep the celebration for the rest of the year going strong here on OWC Radio, and that's kind of looking at the past a little bit in the Apple universe, if you will. And you go way back with Macs, and I wanted to start there before we jump forward into the podcasting years. What was your first Mac? What was the first one you got?
Well, I would love to say that I started with 128K Mac, but we were about, I don't know, 4 or 6 months later than that. We went for the 512K Mac, and I have to credit my husband, Steve, with an awful lot of stuff, and one of the things was our friend Calvin Wong had one, and I think he had the 128K Mac, and he took us over. We went over to his house to look at it, and I'm thinking, well, you know, what do we need this thing for? I am not a visionary, just so you know, and I respect those who are, but it's not me, and Steve started messing around with him. He's like, oh, man, we got to have one of these, so we went out and bought it. We dropped $3,000 on it. And I listened to the show you did with Dave Hamilton. He also said $3,000.
Yeah.
And I meant to do a cost of money analysis from 1984 to 2014, how much money that is. It's got to be like $5,000 or $6,000 in today's dollars.
Absolutely. Maybe more than that. I mean, gas, let's see, I started driving in the 80s. And so
gas is not
was
a good indicator.
90 cents. Milk was about a buck. So had to walk to school both ways up a hill.
I actually have a picture of a gas station with the gas prices. It's either $17.9 or $27.9.
Wow.
Yeah, so you can't use gas as a price.
But $3,000 for 1985 was a lot of money.
1984, actually, yeah.
84.
Well, we did buy, I must admit, that included a box of 10 400K floppies that we paid $100 for.
Well, you'll never need more space than that. You could never fill all those discs.
So the 512K Mac didn't even have a hard drive.
No.
So you did need those floppies because you needed something to put the operating system on. And, well, you got the OS, but anything you wanted to do, you had to use a floppy for that. And we were brilliant. We bought they had the ImageWriter dot matrix printer, and we thought, wow, we don't want to really hem ourselves in and only get the regular page size. We got the wide format, which we never, ever once used.
Yeah.
We paid extra for it, though.
And that was not a cheap printer at the time either.
Yeah, I'm really bummed. I keep my receipts for everything, and I have lost my folder called computers, and that receipt is in there somewhere. And it just kills me to know that I don't have that, because I want to know how much that piece of it was.
Well, I do have to ask, do you still have that Macintosh?
No. I've been pretty good about selling off my Macs or giving them away, so I'm afraid I don't.
I still have my original Mac. Now, I got into the Apple universe a lot later than you did. My first Mac was in 1994, and I bought a Performa 410.
And that's right. I heard you say that.
Yeah, and that was the one that I actually used to create my Mac magazine at the time. So it's got kind of a nostalgic feel, if you will. But I really don't have a whole lot of my other older Macs. They just didn't have that nostalgic flavor to me. So, yeah, plus my wife would not be happy if I had a whole ton of Macs.
Museum or anything.
Right.
I just ran the cost of money calculation. A $3,000 $3,000 in 1984 is $6,625 today.
Yeah.
So don't be whining about your $2,000 MacBook Pros out there, guys.
No, definitely not. And, you know, here's the thing about the older Macs. They didn't do hardly anything compared to what you could do today. There was no connecting to the internet because there was no internet. Heck, at that time, there wasn't even an online service. But didn't it
feel...
What
did we do with them?
Well, that's the thing. Didn't it feel like it kind of, at least for me, maybe I can't really speak for you, but didn't it inspire creativity? It kind of opened up a world that you never knew existed.
You know, I'd like to say I felt like I turned it on and went, whoa, like that with it, but I'm not sure I did. I know for my husband, a couple of things were huge. The first thing he did was he played Money for Nothing, mm-hmm. the Dire Straits song, sure. on the Mac. And this was the first, well, maybe you can give me the exact details, but there was something first about how it could play music, right?
Yes.
What was that? Was it like the first 8-bit music or whatever?
But yeah, something in there that you could actually play music through it. And there was cards that you could put in, say, an Apple II at the time, but they were really, really expensive. But this was built in.
Yeah. I'm sure there's 8,000 people yelling into their iPhones right now going, oh, you should know that.
So well, the I'll problem with that, though, is, you know, I've been immersed in the Macintosh world, or it's just Mac now. They don't even, Apple doesn't even use Macintosh. Did you know that? If you go to the Apple site, there is no such thing as a Macintosh.
It's just called a Mac?
It's just a Mac now. Most people don't realize that. But I spent the last 3.5 years running an Apple specialist in Chicago. And Apple was our biggest partner, obviously, that we sold their products, we serviced their products, we taught for their products. And there was a memo that came out right around 2010 when I first got there that said, in no uncertain terms, not to refer to the computers as a Macintosh any longer. It's just a Mac. And I still don't know what the reasoning behind that is. I mean, KFC is still Kentucky Fried Chicken, as far as I know.
But they probably don't call it that.
No,
right?
They call it the KFC, but it's still Kentucky Fried Chicken. With Apple, it's just a Mac. It is not a Macintosh anymore.
Well, they got a bunch of stuff like that, right? Like, it's iPhone, not the iPhone.
Right.
It's Mac, not the Mac, yep. But we all say the Mac.
It's, they're, and I've said this before, I love the products. I love a lot of the people that work for Apple. I know quite a few people there in very high positions. And they're, to a person, I've liked every single one that I've met and become friends with. I don't always like the company. And it doesn't always make sense, some of the things that they do. But thankfully, I'm doing a podcast for a company that I really like the company itself and their products and their services. So, you know, I kind of get the best of both worlds here. I get to talk about the Macs and the iPads and the iPhones and whatever else is coming out this year.
Well, you know, I know this is supposed to be an interview of me, but I've been wanting to ask a lot of people the same question is, why is it that there is this community around the Mac that doesn't exist around Windows? And
well,
I'm not just saying that because I'm a Mac bigot.
No, no.
I have asked all of my hardcore Windows fans that question, and they don't even understand what I mean by the question. Like, why would we care about each other? Why would we help each other? I don't understand what you mean. You know, and these aren't
mean
people.
I can explain it very, very easily. And this is, obviously, I've been in the trenches just like you for a number of years, podcasting for 10 years, but publishing for almost 20 at this point. Next year will be 20 years publishing for me. And what it is when we started it, Apple was kind of popular, but when I got into it, Apple was in the gutter. Nobody was buying their products. And we knew what the competition was like. We had experienced at least friends with Windows or relatives with Windows and how horrible that user experience was. And we were on the Mac and it was so much better. Why aren't these people using the Mac? It's so much better. Look at all the things that we could do. We don't have to worry about viruses or anything like that. And so we became an evangelist for this product. And when we met other people who was also an evangelist for the product, there was a kinship that was formed, right?
Okay, but remember, those people who lived that dream are now we're the small minority of Mac users.
But the vast majority...
The culture somehow stuck.
No, it really hasn't. Most of the people who buy Macintosh...
So there isn't a community now,
no,
you're saying?
No, not the way it used to be. Not the way...
that we're used to. I completely disagree.
I wish there was.
I still see a growing community of people. I mean, now with things like the Google Plus community that I have going on my podcast, we have people helping each other that are new to the Mac. They've just come on board, or they've discovered something new and they want to share it. I mean, I'm not saying it's the same as what it was, but it's still a hardcore community of people who help sure. each other and are friendly and nice to each other. I mean, sure, there's jerks out there like any place, but it's different than Windows.
I've seen that in Windows as well, but yes, it is different.
Sure, there's pockets of it, I bet.
Sure, but there's not. You got to remember how many Macs Apple is selling now compared to the people that you're talking about in these communities. It's a minuscule number, whereas in the old days, half the Mac users were evangelists. They were really into the community. Nowadays, less than probably 5% are, because Apple is selling so many more Macs than they ever used to sell.
Okay, well, we're just going to have to disagree on this, because I still see such a great community, and if you don't see the good community, maybe you should go find it.
No, I do. I'm just saying it's not like it was, and it's not as big as it was. I think that's where you're misunderstanding what I mean.
I think it's way bigger. Way, way bigger. I mean, maybe not percentage-wise as big, but way bigger, because there's so many more people having fun with it. People who never used the Mac before getting together and helping each other. It's just awesome.
So why
awesome
don't you
sauce.
Think the iPhone and iPad users are doing the same thing?
I didn't say they weren't.
Yeah, you did. You said that you didn't think that the Mac or that you don't see the community around.
I said Windows. No, I said there's not a community around Windows. I didn't say there wasn't a community around the iPhone.
I also think that there's less evangelists than there used to be, but I don't think Apple needs.
I don't think there needs to be.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you remember the guy.
Wait. I don't want to derail you on that. I just something I think about from time to time.
You know, the thing is, I deal with Mac users all the time, and they all kind of have this thing in common, which I can't really put a name to. But you know a Mac user when you meet one. Have you noticed that? You just know that, I bet this person's a Mac user.
And every once in a while you feel that, and then you find out they use Windows, but then they have an immediate excuse why.
Yeah, well, my work.
Like, I'm sorry, my boss makes me use it or something like that.
You know what's sad is I almost kind of feel sorry for Microsoft in that I think Windows 8.1 is the best operating system they've ever made. And
really?
I actually, oh yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you had to use it?
I have. And I also think the Surface Pro, the new one, is a really good tablet. But nobody wants it.
I could not disagree with you.
Yeah, no. It's pressure sensitive. It doesn't crash. It actually works really well. But nobody's buying them. And Microsoft isn't copying anybody. And I think that was, you know, their modus operandi for a long time.
Are we supposed to be talking about the Mac?
Oh, we are.
I don't want to talk about Windows. I really, really don't, Tim.
But my point is, though, that they're finally not copying anybody. They're trying to make something original, and nobody wants it. And Apple is staying the course, and they're more popular than ever. I find that amusing at the same time as I almost feel sorry for Microsoft. But they copied and stole so many ideas from everybody else before. Yeah, I almost go, well, you kind of reap what you sow. So let's move ahead. When did you start podcasting, and more importantly, why?
I actually started in May of 2005, and I was inspired by Adam Curry of the Daily Source Code and Adam Christensen with MacCast. And what I realized was that there were two things going on. Or three actual factors in there is I was stopping people in grocery stores to tell them about cool applications and gadgets and things. You know, people who didn't care, people who didn't want to listen to me. I was really boring at parties. I'd get somebody cornered and, you know, you could tell they wanted to slit their throats. But I had an audience and I was going to tell them about it. And so I thought, well, wait a minute. Why don't I talk to people who actually choose to listen to me instead of forcing myself? Now, the actual reality is I still bother people at grocery stores and parties about this stuff. But now I have an audience. So that was one piece. The second thing I had in my favor was my kids had grown up to the point my daughter is very social and very participative in the family, and she had moved away to college, and my son was, I don't know, he was like 16, 17 years old, something like that, and so he only came down to feed. So I had this free time all of a sudden to fill up with podcasting. So those two factors. The third one, my brother Kelly had just passed away, and I realized had he still been alive, he would have said, do it, Allison, you can do anything, because he really, really believed in me. And so I heard him saying that in the back of my head as I was wavering on whether to do it. So I went ahead and jumped in and got it done. And it's funny, I did, I think, 4 episodes, which is the classic pod fade point.
Yep.
And I stopped. And I got an email from a guy named Neil down in Florida who he loves to hear me tell this story. He said his son heard him this story one time, said, wow, Dad, is that you? You're famous. Anyway, Neil wrote to me and said, hey, where's the podcast? And it was the first time I knew somebody was listening. It was the first feedback I ever got. And I was like, oh, man, I got to keep doing this. And all it took was that one little pat on my punkin head, and I was off and rolling. So since then, I've done it weekly. Light Clockwork comes out on Sunday nights every week.
You're approaching 500 episodes.
Yeah, 478 as of day before yesterday. So, that's a lot of shows.
That's a lot of shows. Have you ever calculated, if you actually sat down and listened to one after the other, how long it would take?
Actually, I wish I could remember who told me they're doing that. Somebody's actually doing it. I hope they're doing it at 3x speed.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I'm with you.
But yeah, it started out, it's so fun. You sent me a clip of one of your early recordings, and it's so fun to listen to those because you hear what your vision was, and then it turns into something completely different in the end.
Well, I sent you was from 1999.
Yeah, there you go.
Before podcasting. In fact, when I did that, MP3s were still all the rage.
That was the new fangled thing.
Yeah, that's right.
What was I going to say about that? But, you derailed my choo-choo when you said that.
I'm sorry. I apologize that you were listening to the older
stuff. First ones. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my first show, I tell you what I'm going to do is I'm going to read to you from the Wall Street Journal's tech section. Because that's what I would talk about, right? I'd read something cool that Walter Mossberg had said, and I'd go to work, and I'd bother people and corner them in the hallways to tell them something I'd learned. So that's where I thought I was going to start. And right around that time was the beginning of the first time I'd been to All Things D, the Wall Street Journal conference. And I ended so I did a bunch of shows about that, and that actually took off quite a bit.
So the question then is, why technology? What was it about the technology that really pushed you into doing a show about that? Because let's be honest, back in 2005, most of the podcasts that were coming out were technology related because it was the techno geeks like us, I guess, that had the skill to be able to create a podcast. And the artists, if you will, they really didn't have that skill. They didn't know how to do it. They just knew how to talk into a microphone.
Yeah, the tools weren't there. Right. I remember when I did it, I was like, okay, so I got to figure out how this feed thing works. I know it's an XML file and it's got some glop in it. So I downloaded Leo Laporte's and I got a copy of it, and I remember pecking through it and saying, okay, it says item, and that's kind of looks like that's the title of the episode. Okay, I'll type that in there for mine, and on and on. And I was figuring out each of the little pieces, and this is before the iTunes tags were there and that sort of thing. And I'm hard coding in, you know, in a text editor into it. And the funny part was when I got to a section that it said length. And it was this giant number.
Right. Where do I get that
and
from?
And I sat there. I thought it was the number of seconds. So I looked at his show and I'm doing the math. Turns out it was bytes.
Yep.
That's what it was. But if you don't get that right, nothing works at all. So that was a really interesting time back then when you had to do it all by hand.
I still do my RSS feeds by hand.
Do you really?
I do. I've tried a number of different services, and each one I've tried, I've had one problem or after another. So I prefer to code it by hand at this point. I've been doing it so long that I could spot a mistake from a mile away. And so
we've all made those mistakes,
yeah,
right?
Right.
I remember I was at my cousin Kyle's house and I'd posted a show and it didn't work. And I was just frantic trying to figure it out. And again, I'm reading, it's kind of good to have the skill to be able to do it. I like not doing it that way, mm-hmm. but, because I had done it before, I was able to notice that the episode I had put out was an MOV, not an MP3. It was a video. And so I realized, oh, I've got to go in and type that .mov in here because it thinks it's got the file type wrong. But now I use Feeder for that, and it's just awesome. And Steve Harris from Reinvented Software just gives spectacular support on that. So I can still go in, like every once in a while, I had a problem. Oh, I had an authentication problem that turned out to be a problem with a keychain, actually, that he figured out in the end. But because I knew how to hard code it, I was able to go in and hard code it and push it out when I couldn't use Feeder that 1 week. But it's been flawless for me, other than that problem I had with the keychain.
What's your FTP application of choice?
I use Transmit for that.
Mm-hmm. Great application.
I like it. Yeah, it's okay.
I switched really over to CyberDuck. I don't know why. I always loved...
I love the duck.
It's something about the duck. It just looks really cute in my dock, I guess. Maybe that is it.
It really is. The duck is funny. Yeah. I used CyberDuck for a long time. I switched over Transmit. And to be honest, I'm not exactly sure why I switched. I don't remember. Somebody said Transmit was cool. So you can basically get me to download software and install it. Hey, Allison, this is cool. Click here.
I went the opposite direction because I had Transmit and then I went to CyberDuck. And I don't know why I did it. And now it's on all my machines.
Yep.
That's fine.
I remember somebody sending me a link to some software for the BlackBerry, actually, and I installed three applications while waiting for a traffic light on my BlackBerry. You know, you literally send me a link and go, hey, Allison, this is cool. You know, as long as I get some hint that this isn't, you know, spyware or whatever. But I'll load software. I'm not a big hardware upgrade-y kind of person. Right after my brother died, I decided to teach myself how to build a PC. So I actually have had a PC voluntarily in my house at one time. Actually, this is a great Mac story. I found out how to put it all together, and I assembled the whole thing. And I thought I had a whole week. And so I thought, wow, this is going to be a great project for my son and I. And, you know, an hour and a half later, I was done doing it. Luckily I screwed up. I didn't seat the Wi-Fi card properly. So that cost me a couple hours. But within a day, I had this thing up and running. And it was this cool, wicked green, you know, with flames on the side kind of thing to make for my son for gaming. And so I gave it to him. And I noticed that he was using it and not his Mac anymore. No, I'd done all that work to build it, but I didn't want him to like Windows. that was my intention. Then I started watching him, and I started thinking, hey, I wonder if this has anything to do with the fact that I got him a big monitor, you know, 19 inches back then, don't you know?
That was huge.
And a keyboard, a separate keyboard. So I got an AB switch, you know, a KVM switch.
Right.
And I hooked the Mac, and he had speakers set up to the audio side, so I put all that plugged into the KVM switch, and he never turned the PC on again.
Now, for those who don't know what a KVM switch is, it's a little device, it's an AB switch, basically, that allows you to either connect your monitor to a Mac or a PC or two PCs or two Macs, whatever.
It's your monitor, it's keyboard, video, mouse, and yep. And this one actually did audio, too. So it actually
that was a good one. Functions.
Yeah, it was really cool. And I was just so happy that he didn't end up... I mean, he just hates Windows. He doesn't like Android. He turns his nose up at all that stuff. So yeah, he's a good little Mac fan.
Well, you know, I've tried Android, and it just feels clunky to me. As good as I think Windows 8.1 is compared to older Windows, it still doesn't even come close to the Macintosh. And I don't really care who makes the products, to be honest with you. I just want what works for me and works best, and it's still Apple products.
I have to tell you, I managed to keep from using Windows until just a few years before I retired. So maybe, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, finally at work, they held a gun to my head and told me I had to get rid of my Mac. And I believed in you know, if you're going to do it, go on the forefront, right? So Vista had just come out.
Oh, that was a bad OS.
So I started on Vista. And can you imagine the non-Girl Scout safe words that came out of my office when I was using that thing? And even when I switched up to Windows 7, I can remember screaming, people choose this? Really? Are you kidding me? I just find it, I hate every minute I'm touching it. Now, I ended up using Windows for like 4 or 5 years, but just so many things that, you know, people don't take into account what's built into the Mac.
Right.
You know, like I got this Vista machine. Oh, okay, great. Now I need to burn a DVD. You can't burn a DVD. Nope. You have to go get software to burn a DVD.
And
I want to unpack I want to compress a file. You know, I want like the unarchiver right. kind of thing. You know, I want to archive something. Well, that's not built in. You got to go get a tool to do that. I want to do this. Oh, you got to get a tool to do that. I mean, everything I did, and you know, I had a lot of Windows friends who could help me. Actually, they worked for me, so they had to help me. And they would eventually find me, you know, an open source version or something like that. But it was unbelievable to me how much regular people would either get nickel and dime to death for all these little accessory tools or just give up and not do it.
I noticed this a long time ago, and it's still as true today as it was then. When you download software for the Mac, it usually just works, and what you install is all you get. On the PC side, oh my, it installs so much junk everywhere. I always hated that there's ads right in the middle of your toolbox, and it's just it was terrible, and I can never figure out
the whole driver thing.
Oh yeah,
I mean, just I was running into all kinds of problems. I did some screencasting at work, and I was using Camtasia Studios, which for versions 5, 6, and 7, I can't speak for version 8 yet, is one of the worst pieces of software I've ever used from an aggravation standpoint. It is highly capable at doing screencasts, but you compare that to using ScreenFlow, I don't hardly ever swear at ScreenFlow. A couple times, but not that often. But Camtasia Studio was, it'd do things like your video and audio would just get out of sync.
Yeah.
So what the hell? Sorry, am I allowed to swear on this show?
Not really.
No? Okay. I'll try to be good. But it was unbelievable to me how many problems I had with it. Things like the audio waveform would come up. I'd be looking at that to edit, and all of a sudden it would just go flatline. The audio was still there, but the display was gone. So I'd have to quit and relaunch it. And I actually tweeted so angrily about it when I was on version 5 that they gave me version 6 for free to try to shut me up. But it didn't get any better. It just, every minute working with it, I had problems with audio, and they tell me, oh, it's, you don't have the right driver. What do you mean audio? It's a USB mic.
Yeah.
Why do I have to have an audio driver? That doesn't even make sense.
You know? With the Mac, it just works. I'll give you a prime example. I just did a review online for Lego Marvel Superheroes. It's a video game. My kids have it for the PS3. I had the opportunity to review it for the Mac, so what the heck. Mm-hmm. And it's a fun game, but I can't play video games with a keyboard and mouse. I can't do it. I can if it's like StarCraft, but a game like this, I need a controller. Well, I have got an old, I'm going to say 6-year-old, Mad Catz Xbox 360-like controller, USB. Mm-hmm. I plug it in, and it just worked with the game. I didn't have to install any drivers. I didn't have to change any settings. I just plugged it in. The game saw it. The Mac saw it, and it just worked perfectly. How often does that happen on the PC?
Yeah, I think every Mac user should go spend, you know, a year in purgatory and then come back.
A year? Wow.
Well, maybe that's a little harsh.
Yeah, I would think.
But I mean, in a month, you're not going to get good at it. But that was the other thing I noticed was I never got good at it. You know, I was using it all day, every day, trying to learn, and I never felt like I got smooth with anything. I always felt like I was struggling to try to figure out how to do things. And I think part of that is because there's so many different ways to do the same thing.
Right.
You know, I never felt like I became an expert at all. I mean, I was a low beginner, not even a low intermediate by the time I'd used it for 5 years. So I don't know. But again, we weren't supposed to talk about Windows, but it's fun, isn't it?
It is. And it's also, it helps us understand our brethren out there who need our help. That they need us to point out the virtues of the Mac.
Show them the right true way in the light.
This is a true story. I had a number of relatives, two of them that were really into computers. And unfortunately, they both, within the last couple of years, both passed away. But they both bought PCs at the time where they knew I was a Mac user. And you're probably the same. In your family, you're probably, well, you or Steve, your husband, are the tech people in the family. So anytime they have a problem, you're the person they go
to. That's me.
Yep. Same thing with me. And on my mom's side of the family, she has quite a large family. So I was getting calls all the time, especially from these two PC relatives. And eventually, I told them both, I cannot help you any longer with your PC. If you want my help, you have to buy a Mac, then I'll help you anytime you need. But as long as it's a PC, I'm not helping you. And the reason was, I didn't choose a PC for a reason. There was a reason that I didn't want it. And I don't want the aggravation, and I'm not even the person that's enjoying the computer.
Right, and you're getting is the annoyance.
Right, so they continue to...
Did they get mad?
No, well, at first they weren't happy about it, but they weren't outwardly angry with me anyways. But eventually they both bought a Mac because they were having so many problems with their PCs, and the only people they could find to help was charging them to come over to help. So they bought a Mac.
That is one thing I do, is I tell people, when they ask me, should I get a Mac? I said, what's really important is, what is the person who you're going to call telling you to buy?
Right.
Because if your next door neighbor is who you depend on, and your next door neighbor loves Windows, you darn well better buy Windows, because that person's just going to wash their hands of you, and then you're going to try to call me, and I'm not going to come over because I live 2,000 miles away. So don't listen to me on what I would do. Listen to the person who's going to help you.
Absolutely, because that's the person that you're going to rely on. And if they're not an expert in your choice, then you're going to have to find somebody else.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I was talking about going back, and then we kind of jump forward into the podcast, but I did want to go back for one more question that I've been asking everybody. Excluding your current machine, what's your favorite Mac of all time?
I definitely know that that would be the Titanium PowerBook.
That was a great machine.
That was my first laptop. My buddy Ron was kind of a forerunner in a lot of this stuff. And I'm going to back up a little bit. When Apple started to go on the rails, I do have to confess that I lost faith. I wasn't sure they were going to be around. So rather than dropping the big change on a brand new computer, I bought his, I want to say it was a Centris 610, mm-hmm. that rings a bell. So I think that was after my Mac 2 SI. I think I went to the Centris 610. And then after that, he started getting into some of the laptops. And we went together and bought matching little titanium PowerBooks. And that thing was just so beautiful. It was just, I mean, that was revolutionary. That got me really excited. You talked about getting excited about what the original Macs could do. This was just, that's when the angels sang to me. It was unfortunate that the titanium itself is a really good shield.
Yeah.
So the Wi-Fi was really bad on it. But other than that, but I never went back to having a desktop again. I know a lot of people have one of each. I have never had anything but a laptop since I got the Titanium PowerBook.
Yeah, I've got one of each. Most of the computing that I do is on my 27-inch iMac with an OWC SSD installed in it, of course.
Of course, it's from OWC.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, I use a MacBook Pro with Retina, the 15-inch. It's actually a 2014, just got it. But I use it with a 27-inch cinema display.
Yep.
Actually, that's kind of a fun story why I have a 27-inch display. I had a 24-inch that I loved. It was just perfect. And it was coming up on 3 years old right when I got the new, not this PowerBook, but the MacBook Pro, but the when I got the 2011. And there was a firmware mismatch between the two devices. So when I plugged in my perfectly functioning 24-inch cinema display into my new Mac, the screen would just randomly turn off and turn right back on again. Not like a flicker, but like gone for maybe a third of a second and then come back. And, you know, I buy things on the forefront. I understand there's little, you know, growing pains whenever you get the first model out. And so I called up Apple and they said, oh yeah, there's you should take it in. And I brought it into Apple and they said, oh yeah, it looks like there's a firmware problem. Just wait for an update. And a month later, it's still going on. I said, yeah. And they said, oh yeah, firmware update, wait for it. And a month later, firmware update, wait for it. So four months in, I called up and I just said, okay, guess what? This phone call's not ending with wait for a firmware update. This, I've got like, $4,000 worth of your equipment on my desk. And I'm starting to have a chemical reaction to this. Like I would catch myself starting to close my eyes because I knew it was about to happen. Mm-hmm. And I said, we're not doing that anymore. And so my little friend authorized me to get a brand new 27-inch cinema display.
Wow.
There's something bad about that, though. You mentioned being old and having to wear cheaters to read now. The problem with the 27-inch monitor is it's significantly taller.
It is.
So the top of your eyes are supposed to be at the top of the monitor by ergo reasons. So now the top is like 4 inches taller than I am at my eye level, and I wear progressive lenses, and I found I was having to tilt my head at like a 40-degree angle to see the top of the screen.
That's not good.
So I ended up getting a different pair of glasses. By the way, I wear contacts and three different pairs of glasses depending on the circumstance. So now I have glasses just to be able to see the top of my 27-inch cinema display.
Or just get a taller chair.
I tried that. Tim, I did.
I'm messing with you.
I sat on phone books. I propped the chair up. I did everything. And finally I said, I better get
you need to get glasses. A barber chair. That's perfect.
Yeah. Oh, no. The problem was then my feet didn't end up, my legs wouldn't fit under the desk. That was the problem with going up high enough.
Yeah, I like I said, I have the iMac, but I love my 2012 MacBook Pro. It's not a Retina, but when I'm doing graphic work, and that's really the only time I really need a Retina, you know, I do miss it then, but I do that stuff on the iMac.
You know what a friend of mine does for that? If he's doing some, he's doing photography work, he's got a 27-inch iMac. He actually uses his iPad as a third display.
Yep.
And he moves them onto his iPad because his iPad is Retina.
Yep.
And so it's kind of a neat way to do it.
It absolutely is. So that was your favorite Mac. Mine, personally, when it came to the laptops, before the whole podcasting thing, you know, my time online was about writing. So mine was the Lombard PowerBook, same as the Pismo. just the model
right
before it.
Yeah, Ron had one of those. I remember seeing that for the first time. We were up in Yosemite for over the holidays, over New Year's, and him bringing this thing out. I was like, ooh,
I loved it. I loved it. And as a writer, it was better than even the laptops that we have now from Apple, because these all have that sharp edge right on the corners, which after a while of prolonged writing... And I know you do a lot of writing.
The first day you get it. I hate the way they got a sharpened corner. Have you seen there's a video? There's a video out there of a guy who takes a file to it and chamfers it off.
No way. I've got to see that.
Oh, I'll send that to you. It's hilarious.
I mean, they look good this way.
Yeah, my wife's going to kill me when she finds all these metal shards in the kitchen.
It looks good that way, but from a purely typing, writing standpoint, I don't think Apple's ever got any better than the Pismo / Lombard Power Book line. They were just ergonomically shaped for your hands perfectly. And even to this day, I could type a lot faster on that than I can on my current laptop.
Really?
Yep.
You like the keyboard better?
It's not so much the keyboard, it's the ergonomics of the laptop itself, because it kind of bevels down in the front.
Huh.
And it's perfect for my wrist. Now, everyone's different, of course, but for me, I just loved it. It was perfect. Now, the screen was terrible. It wasn't a fast computer at all. But, you know, for writing, you don't need anything super fancy. You just need a word processor or even, you know, text edit if all else fails, and a really good keyboard that your hands and your wrists are comfortable with. And that was a perfect machine for me. I did like the keyboard. Let me take that back. I did like the keyboard. It had just enough throw to them that I really kind of enjoyed it. But personally, I hate Apple's keyboards. I always have.
Really?
Ever since they went to the chiclet.
I like the chiclets. Yep. I like it a lot.
You either love them or you hate them. I don't.
Yeah.
No, I guess
mice.
There's probably...
They're mice. I've never liked their mice. No. I've never used one of their mice. The first thing I do is shove it in a drawer.
Do you remember the hockey puck that came with the iMac?
Yeah, I had one of those. Mm. Yeah.
Those were the first ones that came with the very first iMacs were the worst, because later they put a little divot so you could tell which way was up. But the original ones, they didn't. So the mouse would get turned and you wouldn't even know it. Oh, it was terrible.
They also disintegrated over time and got kind of sticky.
Yes,
I still have one and it's all weird sticky.
Yep. You remember you have to take the bottom of your old rollerball mouse out to clean the little things inside?
Oh, yeah, clean. I actually found that really cathartic, though. I enjoyed getting out I do it on telecons at work. I remember I'd get out my X-Acto knife and chip all the little gunk off.
I had a friend who invented this thing, and I told him he should have marketed it, and he never did. Obviously, it's too late now, but he took a rollerball. He made it smaller. He filed it down quite a bit. And then he basically wrapped it with the hard Velcro, not the soft Velcro, the hard part. He'd put it in there, and he would just go up and down on his desktop a few times, open it.
What a cool idea.
All of that gunk would just come off. I said, dude, you got
to
make this.
It was fun to scrape it off.
It was. You get your fingernail in there, and then you get that black gunk underneath your fingernail.
Ooh, I never did it with my fingernail.
Oh, I always did. I loved that. I actually like, you got to kind of roll it with your fingernail as you're chipping away at that black gunk.
Ew.
Yeah.
We're blessing everybody out.
I know. I am. But no, he invented this little
mouse
cleaner.
Idea.
And I said, you totally need to patent this idea and sell it. You will make a lot of money. And it was a good, 6 or 7 years before we got the laser mice. So, you know, his invention would have been worthless at that point. But up until then, I think a lot of people would have bought it.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Well, we all come up with good ideas. We don't take advantage of it, and somebody else does, and you go, oh, man.
Should have done
that idea. So what is your favorite of all the Nasilla casts that you've done? I'm sure you've got a handful, that were absolutely some of your favorite episodes.
I should explain a little bit. We haven't actually said what my show is about. For people who don't know about it,
that's true. We never did,
because it is different. It's a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias, and there, of course, a lot of sarcasm in that sentence. But I named it obscurely so that people could never claim that I was off topic. So I get to talk about whatever I want to talk about, and I've had a couple of fantastic experiences. I got to have Amy Mainzer, who's an astrophysicist at JPL, on the show to talk to us about the research she's doing with the WISE project to look for near-Earth objects. And I'm not a physicist. Steve studied and continues to study fairly heavily in the physics realm. And so he was on it with me to talk to her. And my only thing that really upset me was I had lost my voice, so I wasn't able to participate as much as I wanted to. But Steve loved that. She was absolutely
He loved that
delightful.
You didn't have your voice?
Yeah, because he got to talk. I don't know if you've noticed, but I'm pretty good at the talking.
A little bit.
So he didn't. He did. I had a really good time with it. That was definitely one of my favorites. Now I'm gonna have a brain fart here trying to remember the name of the guy. Oh shoot. Oh no, it's not gonna work if I can't remember his name. Nope. There's another great interview I had with a guy who ran a tech show back in like the early 80s, mid 90s, that kind of era. And Stuart Chaffee, that's his name, Stuart Chaffee. He ran, and now I can't remember the name of his show, but I will try to look him up while I'm doing this. He ran a show all about technology that when you listen to it, usually when you watch old tech shows, you know, it sounds, you know, funny. You laugh at it. Right. Oh, isn't that cute? That kind of thing. And, but Stuart's show was so intelligent that it Computer Chronicles, that's the name.
Okay. Yes. I remember the Computer Chronicles.
Yeah.
The name didn't clue me in at all. I don't know why, but I remember the Computer Chronicles.
Oh, good. It is absolutely worth going back and watching these interviews because they're smart. You know, he's talking about, plugging in a computer into the wall it wasn't Ethernet yet. I think it was a phone jack. And he's talking about what this means and what the future will be because of what they were able to show him on that show. So it's not adorable. It's not quaint. It's interesting because he saw the future in so much of what he was doing. And I got him back on. He said, Allison, I'm not done telling stories. Can I come back? I'm like, yes.
Why isn't he podcasting, for goodness sake?
I don't know. He is doing a lot of other things. Like he was responsible for all of those videos starting to go into the to the Internet Archive. So yes. He got together with the Internet Archive people and said, look, we got to get these videos in. And so I think I'm trying to remember if he shipped them the tapes or what he did, but that's what got rolling the whole idea of even having videos in the Internet Archive. So he's a fascinating, fascinating guy. And I just was thrilled to get to talk to him. That was a really, really terrific show.
Anybody else? Any famous people?
You know, a lot of people go for interviewing famous people. And if you do that, you get a lot more followers. You get a lot more listeners, that kind of thing. But to me, I'm much more interested in people that I find interesting of what they're talking about. Like, I recently had, and again, this is completely, you can't say I'm off topic because you can't guess what my topic is. But I had Professor Marianne Gary from the University of Wellington. I might be saying the title wrong here, but in New Zealand, I had her on to talk about how her research has shown that she can get people to pretend or to believe they have memories that she has actually induced in their brains. And we got so much feedback from that because I think it's something everybody can relate to.
Sure.
Right? You listen to what she's saying, and it's horrifying what she can get you to do. I mean, she can show you a picture of a place you've never been and get you to tell a story of who was there, what happened, how you went fishing on this lake and your grandpa was there. So you will spin this whole story that never happened. It's really, really interesting. That was about maybe a month and a half ago. I got so much great feedback on that one. But, you know, Marianne isn't famous. She is in my world. But, you know, to me, having somebody really, really interesting on and maybe off the beaten path is even sometimes more fun.
So you could say that your show is about subjects that you find interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be somewhat technical. That's probably the farthest off the tech path I've ever gone.
Well, I've gone farther than that myself. I've interviewed people, I'll say, they were rock stars. And my whole idea was to try to spin it, you know, in a tech way, you know, that these big rock stars, well, they weren't so big at the time. They used to be. One was a Night Ranger, for instance. What technology is really doing that for them to kind of revitalize their careers. And I thought it would be, you know, these guys have done hundreds, if not thousands of interviews over the years. They were the most boring people I've ever talked to. Maybe it's because they're so conditioned to only give a little bit, because the more they give, they figure people could edit and make them sound like they're saying something totally different. Or I don't know. They were just, it was so boring to me. Whereas I would interview a developer. I did an interview with the guy who does Carbon Copy Cloner. And it was a great interview. In fact, I did that one on the first go-round here on OWC Radio, the first shows. And it was a great interview. He was so interesting. Maybe it's just because I'm more interested in that than how the song Sister Christensen came out, you know. But, you know, those are the people that I find to be rock stars, if you will. And I figure if I'm having a good time interviewing someone, they're interesting to me, the listeners are going to come along for that.
Yeah.
Which is why I wanted to invite you, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. One thing I want to make sure I give a big shout out. I've mentioned my husband, Steve, a bunch of times here, but one of the reasons I'm able to be such a machine at creating my show. So like I said, every single Sunday night, I do my show live. By the way, if you want to talk about that, that's a pretty fun piece of this. I do the creation of my show live on justin.tv at 5 p.m. Pacific time on Sunday nights. And then the show comes out fully published later that night. And throughout the week, I publish blog posts that are the text of what I'm actually talking about on the show. So it's really unusual podcast in that if you don't want to listen at all, you can get almost all of the content. The second half of my show is called Chit Chat Across the Pond, where I interview interesting people. The first half is gadget reviews and software reviews. There's photography, all security, all kinds of stuff, accessibility stuff. And in that first half, all of the text of that is available to be read. And the reason I'm able to do this is because of Steve. So he is my biggest fan. He makes dinner while I'm working. He reminds me to brush my hair before the live show. He sets up my lighting. He makes sure the windows are closed. He takes the collar off the dog so she doesn't make any noise. He does quality control. He listens to the episodes to make sure there's nothing wrong with it after I post it. He then listens to the show afterwards and makes corrections, which is really helpful when I can't do anything about it. But he loves that I do this. He's my videographer when we go to Macworld and other conferences. Creates all of my videos, and he loves being the guy behind the show. The he doesn't want to be in front, and I do. So
yeah, the thing is, though, he'd be really good in front as well. Because I met him a number of times. I'm friends with both of you on Facebook, and he would be great behind the mic or in front of the camera. But it's refreshing to know that you've got a partner working in the background that's also your husband, and he's your biggest fan. I think that's fantastic. So yeah, how do you do the live show?
I don't want to take for granted at all what he does.
You better not.
Because if I had somebody who was saying, oh, why are you always wasting all that time on that? I'd probably stop doing it. Yeah. I probably wouldn't be able to keep it going like I am. Oh, the live show is fun. I put a link. I gave you a link to my setup. When you go to podfeet.com/live, Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time, you'll see three things. You're going to see a vertical panel on the right-hand side, which is the live internet relay chat. On the upper left, you're going to see video of me, and in the bottom left, you'll see a video of GarageBand as I'm creating it. And that turns out to be really important because sometimes I'll be going along thinking I'm recording and I'm not, and the live chat room's going, Allison, you forgot to hit record! or there's this button, I bump something, I think it's like the letter V or B or C or something like that, and it puts on, remember in GarageBand you can create loops?
Yes.
It turns that loop thing on, and I can't remember how to get it off. And so I think it's Kirshen who always reminds me how to
turn it
off.
Loops or the ticking?
No, I haven't turned the ticking on
that one. Oh, I've done that a few times. Where
like, what?
And I'm like, where's that sound coming from?
So to create that, I use this. I love to describe this because I am juggling so many plates while this is going on. So I've got a Logitech C920 camera. Oh, that's the other thing. Steve buys me toys. So he bought me that camera because he heard about it on from Alex Lindsay on MacBreak Weekly. And he's like, you need one of these. So I have a Logitech C920 camera that's looking at me. I use a tool called Wirecast Studio, which is around $400, the most expensive piece of software I've ever bought from Telestream. And it allows me to create these virtual cameras, combine them together, and then ship it together off to justin.tv. So I tell it in the upper left, I want you to put my video. Then GarageBand is what's called a local presenter in the software. I say capture that window and send it over. Then you can also have remote presenters. So the only thing I've successfully offloaded, all of this is done on my MacBook Pro except for one thing. The live chat, which is probably the least intensive thing, is coming from a spare Mac in the room. And that's a network presenter. And that comes in as the third thing. So now we've got the three video sources, and I've got a little lower third, that kind of stuff. But the audio is tricky, too. So I hijack my microphone and GarageBand using Audio Hijack Pro. I piped those together into Soundflower 2. That's Guy Searle's favorite piece of software around. I hijacked those two together, and then that becomes the sound input source into Telestream's Wirecast Studio. So that's how you can hear GarageBand when I do playback, and you can hear me. All right. Now, I also take that and I pipe it over to an application called Nicecast that sends my audio to an Icecast server, which is the audio that you use if you use the podcast app, or the, I'm sorry, the NoscillaCast app on the iPhone, written by Donald Burr. So if you go there, you can just, you can chat, you can get into the IRC chat, and you can also listen live. You can't see it, but you can listen. That's coming from the Icecast server. That audio also gets piped. The Icecast audio also gets piped to podfeet.com/live. So if you're using a screen reader, if you're blind, you'll be able to listen. You don't have to, because the Flash player doesn't actually show up from Justin. It's invisible. It doesn't have a play button for the blind. So there is a play button on the audio there. But that wasn't hard enough. So I joined up with Alpha Geek Radio. My show is, the live show goes on Alpha Geek Radio on 5 p.m. Sunday nights. And in order to do that, they can't also take the Icecast feed. They need it from, so they use a Shoutcast feed. So I use another piece of software called Butt. It's an open source piece of software. I forget what it stands for. It's an acronym. It's very adorable.
B-U-T-T?
Yeah. Butt.
My 6-year old son would love that piece of software.
You should show it to him. So actually, men into their 90s will think that's funny. Anyway, Butt then sends it to Shoutcast, which sends it to Alpha Geek Radio. See? It's easy. Oh, and on top of all that, I'm actually creating a show.
ADD much?
Yeah, really. Whenever I get it stable, then I go, oh, what else could I do? I could add this. What could I do there? So.
Well, see, I was wise a long time ago to decide. I tried the live show. I tried to do the chat. It wasn't a technical problem. My problem was always I never knew when I was going to be able to record because I've got both older and younger children. My wife literally has to take the younger children out of the house and, you know, school concerts, soccer games, baseball games, all of that. We never know when that's going to happen in the future. So scheduling things is a challenge. Let's put it that way. And that's pretty much why I went audio only. So the basic setup of what I do to record podcasts at this point hasn't changed in 5 years. Same equipment, same microphone. Mm-hmm. Same mobile pre-USB, it's all the same. And I've been using it that way for years and years and years, and it just works for me.
Well, that's no fun. It works.
It works.
How do you screw it up and make things fail?
I start talking. We should give a shout-out to Mike McPeak on Twitter when I posted yesterday, I believe, that you're going to be on OWC Radio. And he replied to that, and he says, wow, my two podcasting worlds colliding.
Oh, how fun is that? Yeah, Mike rocks. He's one of the people who come to the live show call themselves the Nocilla Castaways. Mm-hmm. They have shirts and everything. Anyway, he's one of the founding members, I think. He's rock solid. He's always there. He's a great guy. I really like Mike.
Yeah, he's been a listener of ours for a long time as well. And
even if he hangs out with Mike. Kevin.
Well, there you go. Oh, I do want to give you a shout-out, a personal one. You posted on Facebook, I'm going to say yesterday or the day before, about a movie that I actually went and bought on iTunes and downloaded and really, really enjoyed called Particle Fever. Oh, so thank you for that. That was awesome. A great movie.
So for the audience, Particle Fever is the story of the Large Hadron Collider and the search for the Higgs boson. Now, that sounds super nerdy, and it is, but it's done in such a dramatic way that I think almost anybody would enjoy it. It pits the experimental physicist up against the theoretical physicists, and they talk about the search for science and why it's important and how it's one of the innate things in us, like the search for the need for music and art. I cried twice during the movie.
It's fantastic.
It'll give you chills. It is such a great, great story. And so much that I didn't understand when it was going on. Like how many times did they post, oh yeah, we think we found it, but we're not really sure.
Right. Yeah.
Like you found it or you didn't find it. What is this?
That's what the news media, unfortunately, was referring to as the God particle, which I hated that so much when they were doing that. I really did.
Well, they even refer to it, though, in the movie. They call it that at one point.
They did. They did, unfortunately.
Because it does explain everything. And the what's funny is the ending, you're just kind of like, oh, man.
I know, right?
I want to spoil. No, yeah,
well,
here.
It's a documentary, so it's not like you're giving away that, you know, so-and-so was actually the Winter Soldier in Captain America or anything. But it was a great movie.
I'd love to see that, like, required for all high school students. Mm,
that would be great.
I do want to tell people, sure. I've been in contact with the people distributing it, and as of right now, they can't distribute it outside the United States.
Oh, really?
But they have agreements coming. I know I wanted to get it for Bart in Ireland, and I can't. And they said, hey, hang loose, we're going to have that. So it will be coming eventually, but as of right now, it's not there.
It's definitely worth watching. It's also part of CERN, which, for anybody that's listening to this, should be thankful for, because this project, which really started in the 80s, was one of the reasons that they built up this thing called the Internet to share data from this project with other scientists worldwide. So
this is,
think about that for a minute, right? I mean, we wouldn't be doing what we're doing right now without CERN, and not necessarily this particular project, but yeah, this particular project, because they wanted to share this data.
Well, we wouldn't be talking to each other right now.
No,
right?
Absolutely not. We wouldn't. So it's a great
part
movie.
Part of the movie talks about, well, what's the ROI on this? You know, what's your return on investment?
Right.
You know, what are we going to get from this? And it's like,
that was one of my favorite. When he lays it out there for that economist, and at the end he goes, I don't know. And that was great. An economist could have asked the same thing about going to the moon. What's the return on investment on that? Well,
did you know we wouldn't have baby formula if we hadn't done that?
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's one of the things that we got because we went into space. Like, okay, yeah, explain how that connection got made. But yeah, Particle Fever. Go look for it. So if you go to particlefever.com, on the 15th, you'll be able to buy it as a digital download. Right now, you can do it on iTunes.
Right.
The nice thing about the digital download is it's like, yeah, you can just do whatever you want with it. Not do whatever, but you'll play it on all your devices.
Right.
So I pre-ordered we saw the movie, and on the way home, I went to particlefever.com and bought it right then because I knew I wanted to own it.
Yeah, you actually went to the theater to see this.
Yeah, it was in such limited distribution. It was at this funky little, you know, 12th-rate theater in Santa Monica, and it only played two Saturdays, one showing each, you know, and luckily, we went and saw it. It is a fantastic movie. Really, really fun.
Well, I wanted to publicly thank you for bringing it to my attention via Facebook, of course, and I really enjoyed it. What is the future for Allison and the Nozilla cast? It's the Nozilla cast. She specifically said that some people call it the Nozilla cast, which I would never have. It's clearly spelled Mozilla.
I think it's because of Mozilla. People say Nozilla Cast.
Yeah, maybe. But,
I went ahead and bought the domain. So you can find, if you go to nozillacast.com, podfeed.com, nozillacast.com, I just registered them all one thing.
And we will have links to all this on the show notes at blog.maxsales.com. So what's the future?
You know, I don't know. I mentioned that I'm not a visionary. I wanted to give you a couple of my favorite quotes that I said about the 512K Mac. I said, nobody will need a bigger monitor than mm-hmm. that. Yep. I also said, why would you ever need color? So I'm not a big visionary. I do like doing more video. I've started doing video screencasts for Don McAllister's Screencast Online, and that's a real hoot, which is way more work than you realize. It's just incredible.
No, it's not more work than I realize. I've done some before, and they're quite intensive when you do those kind of projects.
Yeah, I talk to people who go, oh, it's not that hard. It says, yeah, it's hard to do well.
Right.
Yeah,
real, anybody can do it. Not everybody should.
yeah, exactly. So I do want to do more of that. You know, I don't know where it's going. It's going wherever it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
But can I throw in a plug for OWC
Absolutely.
That nobody's paying me to do?
Absolutely.
I love OWC. I don't buy any upgrades for my computers other than there. Every memory upgrade I've ever done on a Mac has been from OWC, from MacSales.com. Every disk upgrade, I put in SSDs with data doublers on two MacBook Pros. And I know there's other companies to go to, but it's always flawless when I go to MacSales.com and OWC. And I just love the support I get. I think one of my favorites was when they once sent me, I think I'd order 16 megabytes of RAM or something, and they sent me 32 accidentally, which was was, you know, like $100 difference in price. And I told him, I called him up and I said, you know, just so you know, I don't even go to the post office for my mother. So if you want to send a box to my house that I will put it in and put it back out by the door, you can have it back. And they said, just keep it.
Yeah. Well, let's preface that by saying, don't count on that, listeners. No,
maybe if it's 32 megabytes, you would.
To me,
but I mean, it's customer service is what I'm saying.
Absolutely. For me, I read a story last week about a couple companies getting in trouble for sending out review units for SSDs. And then once they went into production, after a little bit of time, they switched them over to lower quality products. And, you know, obviously these companies didn't say anything.
So the review units were better than the ones that they started shipping?
Absolutely. Not that they began shipping, but they started sending out the good ones at first, but then they switched over to cheaper products. And yes, OWC is a company, but it's by enthusiasts. I mean, Larry, who started OWC, is a technology enthusiast, and he really liked the Apple platform. And you could tell by the products they carry, the way he treats customers, you're a prime example of that, and the integrity of this company. And those things mean a lot to me. You know, if I'm going to be on the air representing a company, I want it to be a company that I really believe in and that I feel completely confident sending anybody to, my closest friends.
Yeah, I can't do it otherwise.
No, I'm exactly the same way.
There's been advertising opportunities where I'm like, no.
I got, for another podcast, I got an opportunity to make a lot of money from a gambling website.
Jeez.
And I have nothing against gambling, but I don't gamble myself. I've got a wife and kids and a mortgage. You know, I don't have money
to gamble enough.
Right, that's a gamble right there. If it's not a product that I'm using, if it's not a company that I really support, I can't do it. I don't care what the money is. Well, if they would offer $10 million, it might be a little different.
Right out the window.
Yeah, but, you know, I do have a price tag. but seriously, though, if I didn't believe in this company and what they do, and I wasn't a fan of myself, I wouldn't be doing this podcast.
Yeah.
You know? So I do want to thank you very much for coming on this episode of OWC Radio. Like I said, I'm going to put a link to all the websites that you talked about in our show notes at blog.macsales.com. But is there anything else out there, Allison, that you want to give a plug for before we wrap up here?
I guess the only other thing is that we've got a really fun Google Plus community, like I mentioned. That's at podfeet.com/Google. I'll say it again, podfeet.com/Google+. It's really, really cool how the community helps each other. So I get a lot of questions and I answer as many as I can, but a lot of times the questions are too hard. So, I send people to Google Plus community and you get a lot of great people jumping in and helping out. So we have a lot of fun over there. Really, it's essentially like the discussion forums of old, except without the spam and the haters.
Yeah. And at the end here, I did want to say the first time I ever met Allison in person, we were both in the audience for a podcasting something at a Macworld Expo in 2000 and something. I'm not even sure which year. Probably 2008, I'm guessing.
Okay.
And they were talking about enhanced podcasts. Now, those are the podcasts that you can watch at the time on your iPod. And I think it might have worked for the iPhone. I think the iPhone was out that year, or that was the year that the iPhone was coming out. And it would allow you to add graphics to your podcast. So the graphic during the show would actually change. So if you're talking about, you know, a pair of speakers, boom, there's a picture of the pair of speakers right there. Which was cool, except the blind community couldn't use an iPod. They couldn't navigate it. So they were using much simpler MP3 players, which didn't support the enhanced podcast. So while they were talking about the benefits of enhanced podcasts, I actually stood up in the audience and said, you know, I do a podcast and I've actually been contacted by the blind community asking me not to switch over to the enhanced podcast. And you were the other person in the audience who actually stood up and seconded that with other reasons. And it was after that, again, whatever it was that we were in, I actually came up and introduced myself and we met then.
Bonded so for life.
It was, there you go. And but I wanted to thank you for stepping up and saying that because it meant a lot to me. I'm not blind. I don't personally know anybody who's blind. outside of my internet friends. But I thought it was a community that here's a perfect medium for the sight impaired. It's audio. Yeah,
exactly, exactly. So you're going to cut out the group that this is the best possible thing for.
Why would you do that?
I did a talk at Blogworld 1 year called How to Increase Your Audience Size Through Accessibility. And at the time, there were as many blind and visually impaired and hearing impaired people as there were on Facebook. Now, Facebook's gotten even bigger.
Right, sure.
But the idea of cutting out any percentage of the community, we all run around looking for more audience. Why would you cut anybody out? You know, yeah. I mean, enhanced podcasts are cool. Don't get me wrong. But they're a lot of work, too. So part of it was laziness.
Well, there's always that for me as well. But I, you know, my whole point then was to say, if you're going to do it, but also have a simple MP3 version for other people. And I was glad that you were another person that stood up. I do want to thank you for coming on OWC Radio 2.0 episode, again, lucky number 7 with Allison. And thank you very much. And we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Tim. This was a really good time.